Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C., Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. There's Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. It is a big week. There's lots to talk about, but really there's only like a couple things to talk about because only a couple things are important. Ryan, where would you like to start?
You know, sometimes baseball gets simple, Kevin. The Padres are playing their rival in a three-game series. If they sweep their rival, they will be in first place in a division that as recently as a month ago seemed unwinnable. And even if they don't, they're probably heading to the playoffs. This gets real simple. Nuts and bolts baseball talk, I think, here the next couple of days. What do you make of sort of where they've positioned themselves and how beatable are the Dodgers at this point?
Well, I'll tell you what. You use the word rival, and I will say that I have pushed back on the word the use for many years because rival to me implies that, you know, there's a rivalry. And certainly in 2022, the Padres made it a rivalry. But in terms of like winning the West, yeah, not really a thing until now. Look, it's an uphill battle. The Padres control their destiny. The Dodgers don't control their destiny, but which would you rather have? Controlling your destiny? Like, well, I guess the Dodgers do because they can win too. But like if the Padres win every game for the rest of the season, go 6-0, the Padres win the West. There's nothing the Dodgers can do about that. Mm-hmm. They have a three-game lead. I'd rather be the Dodgers right now, but here come the Padres, and gosh, we'll get into pitching matchups. We'll get into all that. Like, what are those of the likelihood? The Padres have an uphill battle. The Padres could also go 2-1 in this series, then sweep the Diamondbacks and still win the division, but that would require the Dodgers losing 2 of 3 at Coors Field. I'd rather be the Dodgers in this situation mathematically, but wow, like, this is good. And as far as the playoffs, Ryan, we can go through all the kind of scenarios, but the Padres are 3 back of the Dodgers. Padres hold the top wild card spot. They're 3 up on the Mets, 3.5 up on the Diamondbacks, who they then leave here Thursday night and go to play the Diamondbacks Friday through Sunday in the final series of the regular season. That's not shaping up to be quite as important as we've been anticipating.
Right. You know, it's funny, since April, right, we've been saying, hey, you know, you're not going to catch the Dodgers, so focus on beating the Diamondbacks, right? The Padres have now almost caught the Dodgers, and it seems as if they're leaving the Diamondbacks a little bit in their dust. There's some separation here. The Diamondbacks are really struggling of late. I mean, they lost to the Giants last night in Phoenix. You know, the Padres could, in theory, enter Phoenix and have that whole series be essentially moot, right? Or it would be a matter of whether they're playing the Diamondbacks or the Mets. The series could matter for the Diamondbacks and not really for the Padres.
If the Diamondbacks, who, by the way, were up like, I forget what it was, but it was huge. It was like 6-0 and then like 9-6, and they lost 10-9 to the Brewers on Sunday, then lost last night to the Giants. Could be one of those where you look back and you go, man, they were like seemingly going to sweep the Brewers like no problem, right? Like, I think it was going to be a sweep. And all of a sudden, season changed in one afternoon on Sunday. But if the Diamondbacks lose once more to the Giants, the Padres win just 1 of 3, let's say, right? So they're to 91 wins. Arizona has to sweep them to get the number 4 seed.
Right.
All right? Right. And that's if the Mets don't go like 6-0 or whatever. So it doesn't look good for the Diamondbacks. No, it does not. And the Padres, who can, as we tape this on Tuesday before the opener of the 3-game series against the Dodgers, the Padres can clinch a playoff spot tonight. One more victory. One more victory. Now, a loss does not. It's this, because of the tiebreakers, magic numbers are basically moot unless you want to talk about like per team, like what it is to eliminate a per team. But even that is tricky. The Braves and the Mets play today as well. A loss by the Braves or the Mets does not get, it helps the Padres, but it doesn't get them into the playoffs today if the Padres lose also, because the possibility would still exist, regardless of who wins between the Mets and the Braves, of a 3-way tie at 90 wins that eliminates the Padres. Mm-hmm. We don't need to – you can read that, what I write and all other people write, whatever. It would just be too confusing to talk about and have – look, follow myself when I talk, but it'd be too hard to follow. Just trust me that a 3-way tie involving the Mets and the Braves most likely in virtually every scenario eliminates the Padres.
Mm-hmm. So all the Padres have to do to eliminate that possibility is win.
Because the Braves to get to 90 wins would be sweeping the Mets, which means they would win the three-way tie based on having the better record, winning percentage among the three teams. And then the tiebreaker comes between the Mets and the Padres, and the Padres are out because the Mets beat them 5-7.
Right. Let's talk about the Mets right now, though. You know, the Diamondbacks lead the Braves for a game and a half, with a game and a half lead for the final wildcard spot. The Mets have now vaulted into that second position. Right now, again, they're playing the Braves. Lots can change, just like Padres playing the Dodgers and Diamondbacks. Lots can change. But the Mets are a team that we haven't talked about really as a likely playoff opponent for these Padres in a while. We all sort of planned. In fact, we made some travel accommodations thinking that the Padres were going to play the Diamondbacks 3 in Phoenix and then 3 more either in San Diego or Phoenix. Do you want to face the Mets at this point, or would you rather face the Diamondbacks?
I was just imagining this morning, and I'll speak for myself, but what I assume would be like Padres fans' reactions. Oh, great. You played yourself into position to face the Mets. And and here's what it probably at this point would be. It would be the reverse of the wild card series in 2022. The right. Padres would have the superior record, though not quite as superior as the Mets did that year. They had 101 wins. They just lost the tiebreaker to the Braves. The Mets would be coming to San Diego instead of the Padres going to play in New York. This would be like, I think, the toughest of your first round playoff matchups, without a doubt, I think.
Right. And the winner of that round would play Philadelphia, assuming everything held?
Play the Dodgers, assuming everything held. But right now what's happening is the Dodgers have the best record. It's like by a half a game. They've played one fewer games. Philadelphia played last night. But, I mean, it's interesting because the Dodgers are 93-63. Philly is 93-64. The Yankees over in the American League have the best record at 92-64. The Padres have the fourth best record in the major leagues.
Wow.
Right now. But wow. So, yes, I think where was your point you were going to, like, who would you play? Yes, right. Like the hardest thing could be the Phillies finish – in the number one seed, you got to get through the Mets. You got to get through the Phillies. And then you got to play the LCS. But, hey, you got to play whoever to get there. But a lot of times that wild card matchup, like who was the toughest matchup for you? If you can avoid that team, man, I've said all along, don't want to face the Mets in that first round.
Right. I think the best case scenario for these Padres is to somehow beat the Dodgers and win the West.
Yes.
People talk about how the layoff is bad. Man, give me that bye. I think that's it. You have already advanced. It's like winning a playoff series.
I will say this, that it didn't apply necessarily to the Braves last year, but you know, the Braves and the Dodgers mm-hmm. have been one and done since this new playoff format. Mm-hmm. And that was after getting the bye.
Right. Right.
I will say this about the Dodgers. Is it the bye, or is it the fact that they generally have wrapped up the West and not had to, you know, they've been a playoff team, basically. Mm-hmm. I know 2021, them and the Dodgers, them and the Giants, that was a different thing. But these last 2 years, let's just go there. I mean, no one was challenging the Dodgers for the final month. Was it the 5-day layoff, or was it that they didn't have to, you know, find the gumption at the end like this year? Like, to me, that might be the most dangerous thing about the Dodgers, besides Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman, and Teoscar Hernandez, is that this is not like they're not the favorite. I don't think you can call the Dodgers underdogs. Let's never do that. But they're
billion-dollar underdog.
Yeah. The big bad Dodgers. And maybe that's a different mentality for them.
It might be. It could be kind of the old George Costanza thing, right? It's running away from everybody didn't work. So now maybe you do the opposite and see if that works. To me, the worst case scenario here, if you're the Padres, is that you bloody the Dodgers a little bit in this series, right? Say you take 2 out of 3, but you still don't win the division.
Okay.
And so now you are playing, say, the Mets in the first round of the wild card, but the winner, but Philly, by virtue of now being the number one overall seed in the National League, you've then got to go to Philly. Like, there's a chance that by taking 2 of 3 from the Dodgers, you've consigned yourselves to playing the Phillies in the second round instead of LA. And I think just about everybody would agree, at least in the divisional series, you'd rather play the Dodgers.
I think that you're right. And then I absolutely think you're right. And I think we could talk about it forever as to why, and we probably will over the next week. But I will also then say this, like, as strongly as I feel that like the Mets just somehow isn't a good matchup. And I honestly, the Padres should be better than the Mets, but I think that everyone that plays the Mets almost feels like, wait, how are they doing this? Like, they've gotten clutch performances. Their pitching has been just phenomenal. And like, no one can say exactly why, like, all these guys are being so effective. Sean Manaea, you know, who's the other lefty they have that has dominated the Padres? But I should know because he's a really good pitcher who's a veteran, who's just a crafty guy.
Quintana.
Quintana. Gosh, you know, I love watching him pitch, too. Yeah. Like, just wow. But other than that, Ryan, it's like, you know what? If you want to win the World Series, you got to beat the best teams theoretically anyway. So
that's a great point. That's a great point.
And the Padres are a really good team, or set up to go deep. And they're a different team than lost 5 of 6 to the Phillies in, you know, May and June. They are. They're a much better team. This, based on what they've done, take whatever the opposite of recency bias is out. You know, this feeling of foreboding doom by Padres fans, and probably permeates into the media to a certain extent as well. Take all the past out and just go into what has this team done? None of this should really be a problem.
Right. I've watched enough Padre baseball. It's funny when you said the media, I sort of waved at you. I've watched enough Padre baseball in my 40 something years of life to think maybe that whatever the worst possible scenario for them that exists is going to be what happens. So in my mind, at least, they're playing the Mets in the first round, and the winner plays the Phillies.
That's fair.
Yeah. I hope to be proven wrong. Let's talk about this Dodgers matchup a little bit. 3-game series starts tonight at Dodger Stadium. Padres have Michael King going up against Landon Knack. Kevin, you had a wonderful story about Michael King in today's paper, making the argument, and I think you're correct, that, you know, while Dylan Cease has the no-hitters and Joe Musgrove is every Padre fan's favorite Padre, and Yu Darvish has overcome a ton personally to come back and be with them, it's Michael King who may be the Padres' best pitcher so far this season. He's been on fire in his last 13 starts, posting a 2.16 ERA, holding opposing hitters to a 577 OPS. He's been good but not great against the Dodgers, 4.11 ERA over 15 and 1/3 innings this year. What makes him so good, and you know, what are the expectations for him the rest of the way?
Well, I'll say this. There was also a 7 shutout against the Dodgers. I think he began his season in a relief appearance against them in Korea, and I forget the exact numbers, but I think it was 2 runs. I think he also got the win in that game. I could be making all of that up, but, you know, he has been pretty good against the Dodgers, and my deal is Dylan Cease is the Padres' best pitcher when Dylan Cease is at his best. As a matter of fact, Dylan Cease is one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball when he is at his best. There have been enough, and they've been not just isolated incidences where Michael King's bad starts have been isolated incidences. He's been their most consistent pitcher. There have been streaks, a couple of them, one of them fairly long, where Dylan Cease just was not giving the Padres a chance to win most nights. Whereas Michael King has gone out for the most part and given the Padres a chance to win. And also, like, not just like a chance, like, oh, you gave up 3 or 4 and this offense should be able to win that way. Like, 1 run or 0 runs. Now, look, I'm not going to, you know, really argue with someone who tells me, no, you're wrong. Dylan Cease is the Padres' most valuable pitcher. I think that there's a real argument, and it's not just me. There's people in the organization. Like, if you had to on this very unimportant topic, because the reality is, the great thing is the Padres, you almost can't be wrong with your answer. That's the good news, really. But that Michael King has, over the course of the season, been their most consistent / most valuable. And what's remarkable is like, we just did all that without talking about the fact that he is in his first year as a starter and has absolutely blown past virtually everyone's expectation except his own in terms of innings pitched. And he's making his 30th start tonight.
Right. Michael King is a little bit out of central casting, I think, of your ace. I mean, man, does he look the part? Right. What they say is his dad was on TV, which to me makes a little sense. Photogenic guy, big right arm, throws hard. I think that the question was never about his talent. The question was about whether he could last six innings in a game. And you had a wonderful point in your story today. His mentality went from come in out of the bullpen, get guys to swing and miss, right? Because you're inheriting runners more often than not. The goal is to strike guys out. Now it's attack hitters in a way that will allow you to go deep into games. And it took him a little while to figure that out. But man, once he put it all together, he's been great.
Yeah. And he does. I mean, he's got a real good fastball, but it's a changeup. I love watching it. The sweeper, he's got actually five pitches. He's a legit five pitch guy who can get outs, get soft contact. That's a starter. And then you throw in the mentality and like, they think this guy can be like a number one, right? So not to get ahead of ourselves, but next year is the last year of team control. It'll be real interesting to see what Michael King's future is here, because like, this guy's going to get Cy Young votes. He's going to be a down ballot Cy Young guy if people are paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Again, same for Dylan Cease, who goes Wednesday, right? He's under control through the end of next season. Another guy who may get Cy Young votes. Another guy who is really good when he's good. Goes up against Jack Flaherty on Wednesday. Trade deadline acquisition. He wears number zero, which freaks me out. But a veteran guy who's pitched in a lot of big games in his career.
And been pretty good for the Dodgers. Not great, but pretty good. And they've done well, 6-3 in his starts. He's 6-2 since they got him. Yeah, like my big thing is this. The Dodgers, you used to go there and, man, you were matching up Darvish, Musgrove, Snell, right, against, you know, Buehler, who, yes, you face Walker Buehler, but not the same Walker Buehler. We can talk about that. But you were going Urias, Bauer for a couple years. You were going Gonsolin, who was owning the Padres, vintage Kershaw. Remember Dustin May? Like, I mean, like it was, oh, wow, this is going to be a gauntlet. And that's not what you're facing now. Now, that said, Landon Knack could go out. They've never seen this kid before. He can shove it, right? But this is not that. This is an entirely beatable set of starting pitchers.
Right. Thursday, you mentioned Walker Buehler. He goes up against Joe Musgrove. I never thought I'd say this about Walker Buehler. He's 1-6 with an ERA above 5.5. Really struggling, walking everybody 3.5 per nine innings, allowing an 8.78 OPS. By the way, you think I'm just pulling these numbers out of thin air. Jeff Sanders gets the big assist for a lot of these details. Buehler struggled. I mean, he was here in May, allowed 3 runs in 3 innings. Is not the same, and that's what happens when you come back from Tommy John surgery. It just is.
Tommy John surgery had a hip thing, kept him out for a couple months. Since he's come back, I think he's gone 6 innings like one time since he came back in early August, I think it was. Mm-hmm. There's a guy who, like, a 1.8 ERA against the Padres in like 11 starts before this season. Like, you did not want to. This was Walker Buehler. This was the future of the Dodgers, right? This was like taking over for Kershaw, like the mantle. And that's not who he is right now. Don't put it past Walker Buehler that he could not go on Thursday night and be that guy, or, you know, next year or whatever. But like, that's not who the Padres are facing now.
Right. Thursday, he goes up against Joe Musgrove. How's this for a stat? Joe Musgrove has not pitched against the Dodgers stateside this year.
It is surprising until you go, oh yeah, that's right. There was the 2 weeks in April, then he missed them in May, and then he was out. So yeah. And you don't play teams. Here's one of those funny things. You don't, that extra series home and away, so two fewer series against, it really makes it, it's not as odd as it used to be.
Right. No, you're right. You're right. Joe Musgrove, a San Diego guy. I know that this is, I don't know what the correct answer on this is. Does he get up for the Dodgers more than playing somebody else? Or is it the situation more than anything?
I want to say yes. And then yes. Like, so there won't be any problem on Thursday for Joe being, I mean, this will be big game Joe, right? And you have to feel pretty confident when that happens, like what you're going to get from big game Joe. So
yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Jeff Sanders, in his preview on our website right now, has a little section called Training Room. Let's talk about that real quick as it pertains to the Dodgers. You ready? Clayton Kershaw, bone spur. Anthony Band, hand. Tony Gonsolin, Tommy John surgery. Tyler Glasnow, elbow problem. Gavin Stone, shoulder problem. Dustin May, flexor and esophagus problem. River Ryan, Tommy John surgery. Emmett Sheehan, Tommy John surgery. Austin Barnes, hurt with a toe injury, but could be back by the end of the postseason. Kevin, I've been watching baseball a long time. I'm not sure I've ever seen a team hit by injuries the way this Dodgers club has been.
Yeah.
I guess maybe as it pertains to pitching.
Yeah. I mean, especially you just named a couple guys in there that would be real, real potential difference makers if they were what they have been in the past. And especially, you know, against the Padres, like where you'd be going in going, oh, okay, this is who you're facing, or this who could come out of the bullpen, or this, you know. So certainly the Dodgers, and they signed Glass now, who, you know, two nice starts against the Padres. They thought they were going to get, or maybe they thought this is exactly what they'd get, but they didn't know that he wouldn't be available at the end of the season. I don't know, but, you know, the guy has an injury history. Yeah, things not working out so great for the Dodgers.
Yep. One thing that has been working out great is Shohei Ohtani. I can't believe that we've gotten into minute 23 of our podcast and are just now mentioning him. Best player in baseball a week ago put up what many consider to be the best single stat line in the history of baseball. What's the approach if you're the Padres here? Is it limit damage? Are we going to see Barry Bonds circa 2003 just don't give him anything to hit? What do we think sort of the approach is going to be?
Very interesting question. Now, I'm sure Jeff Sanders has this as well, where Shohei Ohtani has a 636 career OPS against the Padres, fewest or his lowest against any team. Don't have to even qualify that of how many plate appearances, whatever, his lowest against any team. Now, Tom Cosgrove's not on the roster. The lefty has been very good against him, but that's still like they have handled him well. It's two home runs against them in 78 plate appearances, 21 games. They have been able to handle Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
That's not to say that you go in going, hey, we've been able to handle Shohei Ohtani. We'll be. No, I mean, depending on the situation, extremely careful with Shohei Ohtani.
Yes. And one of the things that the Padres got at the deadline and with the return of some guys is they are more left-handed out of the bullpen than they have been. I'm sure that none of that was a coincidence. If you've got to face the Dodgers in the playoffs, the Dodgers have Freddie Freeman and Shohei Ohtani, two really good lefties, great lefties too in Philadelphia. If you've got to face, the Phillies, you know, they've got Schwarber, they've got Harper. In a lot of ways, you know, we may see some Adrian Mora honed in big situations here. We might see Tanner Scott maybe a bit earlier if Shohei Ohtani or Freddie Freeman are due up. I'll be really curious to see how Mike Schilt manages his bullpen in this series, because, again, it's that playoff atmosphere, right? It may give us a taste of what's coming starting next week.
I think we've gotten a taste because it's remarkable. Like it's been like a 4- and 5-man bullpen, basically.
Yeah.
Because for a few reasons. That you have not seen Yuki Matsui, Alec Jacob, Wandy Peralta, not much of Brian Hoeing, because starters are going deeper, so there's fewer innings for the bullpen. Okay, so that's great. Mm-hmm. You're also just playing these close games, these three, maybe four runs, most likely 2-1 run in when the starter comes out, in terms of the difference, and you're trying to win. I mean, like, not like you're not trying to win in May, but it's a different deal. Yuki Matsui, seventh inning, fine. It's what we got to do. I think that unless you're getting blown out or blowing them out, probably going to see more of the same coming up here in this series. Except to your point, even more so, where, yes, maybe employing Tanner Scott, Robert Suarez, Jason Adam differently. Adrian Morahone, who has shown, look, Adrian Morahone's a powder keg, okay? Yeah. But he's also really come through in some really big situations for the Padres this year because he's extremely talented. Jeremiah Estrada, I think it's like a 5-man bullpen still, but how he uses them, yeah, it will be. And I think this is a real strength for the Padres. I think that they've done a real good job in terms of using their bullpen this year.
Yep. If the Padres get a save opportunity against the Dodgers in LA, who do we think is attempting to close out games?
Well, Mike Schilt's looking ahead in the seventh inning going, okay, what's likely here? All right. Will I be getting Freeman? Will I be getting Ohtani in the ninth? That could have something to do with it. But their closer right now is Robert Suarez.
Gotcha. I think that what he did the other day had to have calmed down some people a little bit. He was a little bit better. But again, they have a real luxury of having Tanner Scott back there too.
They do. Hey, now I think it was big or potentially big. He finished that game with two changeups.
Yeah.
One of them, a swing and miss to end the game. Now it was the White Sox. That was Gavin Sheets, right? Mm-hmm. To end that game, not Shohei Ohtani, but I think that was big because that's one of the things they'd been trying to get Robert Suarez to do more was mix things up. Look, they've been very supportive of that fastball is amazing. So as long as it's working, great. But like he didn't have the conviction to use these other pitches. Sometimes you got to hit rock bottom in order to make changes. All of us. All right. So maybe he was like, all right, I got no choice. I got to throw these pitches. He threw just his fourth cutter all season in that game. Now it got hit, but it was a pitch that he showed them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're right.
That was the significance for that outing for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's so interesting, Kevin. Yeah, we talk big picture. The purpose of this podcast is almost always to provide context and big picture and 30,000 foot view. But man, this becomes a football season now. Every game matters, right? And I'm not sure in the sport of baseball, you can really say that outside of situations like this. The Padres are playing two playoff contenders this week, both of whom, again, if they can get hot, they control their own destiny here. Could win the division, which as recently as 2 weeks ago, I'm not sure we would have even entertained on the show. The odds of it happening were so long. So very interesting. Very interesting.
Is it 7 of 8 that they've won? I mean, this is, you know, now look, in there was the Astros, you know, Giants, not so great, but they swept them. Historically bad White Sox swept them, but there's nothing to say. Again, whatever the opposite of recency bias is, just look at or you apply recency bias. Apply the last two-thirds of the 2024 season. There is no reason to think that this Padres team is not going to finish this job and give itself a chance to win the World Series.
Absolutely. And the reality is, I think even for fans who are a little, shall we say, cautious, fans who may have been burned by falling in love with teams in the past. The reality is the 2024 Padres win far more often than they lose. And here in the second half of the season, I'm not sure there's been anybody better.
And against good teams, against bad teams, against whoever, they truly are. It's funny how many of baseball's cliches that they personify, you know, one of them be like, it's only about us, right? We concentrate on us, we'll be fine. And every team says it. And so you're just like, oh, whatever. And then this team shows it. There's many others that it goes that they do that as well.
Absolutely. I put you on the spot at the end of every episode and you got to do it again today. Shirtless walk-off celebrations. Against them.
Only so many people that can pull it off. You know, don't do it too much. It's got to be special.
Okay.
Now, you know, and you say walk-off is special. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, like you can't do the LFGSD all the time either. That gets old, right?
Right, right.
Like you can't just – even if you're Fernando Tatis Jr. and you're, you know, they use you as a model on the cover of those trashy novels, right? Like you can't do it all the time. But here's the thing about Fernando Tatis Jr. and why I might be wrong. He's that cool that he can do it. Whatever he does is cool.
Right.
If that guy wore clogs, it would be cool.
It's a great point.
He's probably the guy who brought Birkenstocks back. He's not.
How about the sunglasses? I mean, even the ridiculous sunglasses. Every kid I know, there's a couple in my house who insist on wearing those when they play baseball with eye black on underneath because Fernando Tatis Jr. does it, right?
It's absolutely remarkable how much – it's not. I mean, it's obvious why, but how much kids love this guy.
They do. It's crazy. Yeah. And I suppose if I was built like Fernando Tatis Jr., I'd be looking for excuses to be shirtless. Probably.
Hey, Ryan, don't sell yourself short. Give it a try.
This is a good place to end it. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Padres Dodgers 3-game series starting tonight at Dodger Stadium. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.